Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm gonna be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
Thank you very much. And now Valerie Daniel is our presenter for today. Valerie will be talking about embodied presence in the workplace. Valerie is a certified personal and professional coach based in Dallas, Texas. And she also leads and facilitates groups. Valerie holds an MBA and a BA in psychology. And Valerie, you have the microphone.
Thank you. Well, this is exciting and a little ironic for me. My world for over 20 years was in the corporate world. I traveled internationally. I was immersed in business. And I loved a good part of what I did. But the closer I got to the end of that 20 years, the less alive I was. By the time I left, I was a carcass and pretty much numb. And by the time I woke up again, I became a coach. I went into relational practices. I worked really hard to wake up. And I swore I would never touch corporate again, that I would stay as far away as I possibly could from being in that environment. Well, over time, I started getting some corporate clients. And I realized that I loved it. There was something amazing about bringing all that I had found and all that I had learned about aliveness and having a body and telling the truth and bringing your creativity and sometimes just going, you know what, this isn't working out. All of that back to a world I had left. And I found that I could free the inmates. Often it was within their own prison. It wasn't a prison that was the company they worked for. It's how we relate to what we do. Right now, I'd like for you to think about how you relate to your work. When you get up and you get ready to go in, are you excited? How much of you gets to be there? And how much do you leave for your friends and family? There's There are other questions I could ask, but I'm just going to leave it there with what it's like for you. Because when I work with clients, a lot of times that's what I'm working with. I had somebody the other day say that her work was a dumpster fire. And then as she went on to describe it, it was like the work itself, the job itself was in a dumpster fire, but actually she got a lot of joy out of the dumpster fire. Well, actually, she's not in a dumpster fire. She actually loves what she does. There's just a lot of chaos there. It really depends on how we see it, how we see what's going on. The thing that I find with corporate clients is that a lot of times they need some help with emotional intelligence. First place I can think of is in telling the truth. I found that a lot of times business leaders, the people at the very top, don't know how to give good feedback because it's vulnerable to give straight feedback. It's vulnerable to tell people that they're not doing a good job. And also to say the other things that make that work in being with someone, the things they're doing well, what you like, all of those things, but making sure that you're very clear. Brené Brown talks about clear being kind. And I believe that clear is kind and unclear is unkind. We leave people in doubt and wondering what's going on. And it's a frightening thing for people to be left flapping in the breeze. So as I think about it right now, I think one of the hardest things is for people to know what their real issue is with their work. I've got a good example. I had a person who's brilliant, and he led a team of brilliant people. I mean, some of the smartest people in the entire world. And we were in a group setting, and I asked him, "What do you most want from your team?" And he said, "I would like for all of you to know as well as I do how incompetent, how lazy, and how stupid you all are." Great. So he was thinking that because he needed high performance out of them, that he needed to be as honest as possible about how he was seeing them, right? Well, the gentlest soul on that team, the most soft-spoken guy, yells at the top of his lungs, just screams about how awful it was to hear that. He can't believe he said it, and how hard they work. And it was just this, he was crying and screaming and just a cathartic, probably been building up for a year, explosion. Well, you could hear a pin drop. Everybody turns to the leader who has the biggest tears I've ever seen streaming down his face. And everybody's stunned. They can't believe that this guy that's so cerebral is sitting there just crying. And then he lets the whole team know how hard it is to need them to meet such high standards and how much he cares about them. And he doesn't know how to be with both. Well, pretty soon, this whole group of scientists is in tears. And it's just a moment that you don't do a lot with. You let it just sit there, just like that. Let it just breathe, no words. And later he came up and he goes, what did you see? Said, I think what I saw is they needed to know you cared. And now they're going to be a lot more likely to walk through a fire with you. He said, yeah, I think that's what I saw too. So, you know, who wants to stay away from corporate when you got things like that happening? It's like there's something of the fact that they don't do this stuff that a lot of us do all day long, like feel their feelings and everything, means that the breakthroughs are just these huge ahas, and they ripple and they stay and they change things in ways that just make my heart sing. And I think a part of it's therapeutic for me from having been in another kind of environment, right? So when I was in the corporate world, I had no body. I couldn't feel my body, you know, childhood wounds, et cetera, right? So, and my experience there didn't make it any better. It just made that more shut down. But, you know, that whole thing about how the best leaders trust their gut, you know, the guys who rule the world, they all trust their gut on making decisions. Well, my gut's not available to me, right? And Scott, he was a psychologist, and he won the Nobel Prize for Economics because he proved that everyone takes information in emotionally first and cognitively second. Well, the rub on that is if you can't identify what you're feeling, then you don't know what's informing your decisions. So I help people to feel their bodies, and I help them to know what they're feeling. And I think I'm pretty good at it because I couldn't do either one. And so there is a way to get there, and it's part of becoming embodied, and it matters in business. It matters because you can be presented with all of these choices, and they kind of look, they're different, and you don't know which ones to go with. And at some point you have to have something you can trust in yourself. And what's what makes great leaders is they can trust something in themselves. I'm seeing these comments say different things like ouch, and I'm wondering what's going on.
So I asked the question, how many people have been in this kind of workplace? Because I used to work in a bank. So I listened to you, and it just reminds me my own corporate years before I left it to pursue healing arts and personal development. So somebody writes me, newspapers, my editor sincerely believed that by making reporters competitive and suspicious of one another, he could foster better journalism. So I'd like to invite people to respond in the chat to anybody who can, who is working in the kind of workplace that Valerie is describing or has worked there. Put it in the chat, and this is the time to let it out and say how you feel about it.
It has me think of meetings, and so this is what meetings are like now. Meetings are where we all bring ourselves, we bring our bodies, we bring our creativity, we bring our disputes, we bring them all to the meeting, right? And I don't know what's going to happen in the meeting. Nobody knows, because we're all going to, you know, we're going to come together, and we trust that we're going to work it out. Right? And I don't know. And amazing things come out of this, because we're in uncertainty, right? We're all bringing it at the same time. 25 years ago, I always liked to have the meeting before the meeting with my compadres, so that we would kind of have a preset plan before we got into the meeting. The last thing I wanted to be was to be in presence where there was uncertainty, right? You wanted to go in and make sure your agenda won, So you didn't have to be in that flapping in the breeze where anything could happen. Just think of how much I cut off all the creativity. But, you know, just not having that trust among a group of people, right? It's not okay to be vulnerable, to say, I'm not good at this. Are you good at this? Maybe you should take this on and I'll take this other thing. And just the way that life should work, where we're able to say, I suck at this, right? And I'm really good at this. Why don't we trade off? It's a very different environment. And it's the difference between a part of us over time continually to atrophying. Susan Scott, who wrote Fierce Conversation, she wrote some other books, but she said that businesses succeed and fail first gradually and then suddenly, one conversation at a time. And it's the same with relationships. It's like, it looks like it's a little thing, that thing we don't say. And it's going to take courage to say it. Really, it's not necessary. And over time, those things that we don't say grow and grow and grow. And every time they're not said, or they're said in a way that says, I want you to know how stupid and how incompetent and all of that you are, a little more of us is offline, or the opposite. Great leaders invite these conversations, these difficulties, these things that's going to take courage to show up for. And the best leaders are the ones that have developed the capacity to take feedback, I don't care how harsh it is, and find what's true and leave the rest. Now, what that takes is usually working with a good bit of shame. Like, shame prevents us to being able to take in harsh feedback and see what's true, right? Just a lot of work to develop, just a huge capacity to go, okay, they just yelled at me and they said a lot of terrible things, but this thing here, I need to look at that. Ken Wilber said that nobody's good enough to be 100% wrong. And I love that way of looking at things. It's a pretty amazing thing to remember right in the middle of getting feedback like that. Yeah. The other thing I'd like you to know about work is that there is a way in which it is a crucible. Life is going to reflect itself through your work. Same issues that show up in your life are going to show up in your work. I'll give you an example from recently. We were in a group doing a group facilitation thing and doing some certification circles. And there was a guy that was leading a circle, wanting to be a facilitator, and he just wasn't leading. He was just letting it amble wherever it wanted to go. Now, this is a really talented guy that works in a very high-pressure corporation. Right. And so afterwards, I'm like, what's going on? Right. You didn't lead that circle. And he said, I don't want to be big. I'm afraid people won't love me if I'm big. So I also do some coaching with this person. And I know that every day he shows up at work, and he works as a frontline manager with on a manufacturing line. And there is a woman who has his number that's worked there for years. And every day she bullies him, and he's her boss. Life is pushing that guy to step up and be big. And it's easy for me to say, but I see it as beautiful. Life is not going to let go of him until he either leaves or he accepts stepping up and being as big as he is. I have another way I want to talk to you about work being a crucible. Near the end of my corporate career, I had a job where the truth was hard to find. They were going to sell the company. And so they wanted the numbers to look good. They wanted the products to come out on time. They wanted a lot of things to happen so they could sell it for top dollar. And I was in this place where I was given a target that was double what we thought we could do. And every month that I didn't meet my numbers, because there was no way I was going to meet these numbers, I had to create a new plan with the same numbers for less months, right? So it was like this fictitious confection that I made up and had to report about in this. It was just such a farce. And I mean, you can just picture me. I'm over here and I'm learning to meditate and I'm becoming more in touch with myself as I lie like a dog every month. And they know I'm lying and I know I'm lying and we're all complicit in this lying, right? And I can just see the molecules of my soul dying as I continue to do this. So, Joyce, you look very depressed over there with your head on your... So, this all culminates, and I go in to see my COO to do a true confession that we are not going to be able to deliver this product on time. The other thing was about sales. This was about a product we were developing that the features weren't ready. We weren't going to be able to deliver it with a full feature set, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought he deserved to know the truth. He goes, "What makes you think I want to know the truth?" And you know that moment when you realize you've been incredibly naive, that your idea of what was going on has nothing to do with what's actually going on? Well, it was one of those moments when I realized he knew and he didn't want me to tell him. Because he wanted to be, yeah, the product's coming in on time and it's going to be great. And you guys should pay me a lot of money for this company. Now, the crucible was mine. It's my crucible. Because in that moment, it was time for me to leave. That was like that final, you know, all of those monthly meetings were one thing, but that moment was the moment that life said, are you going to play it? Are you going to see it as safe to stay here in this misery? Or are you going to step out of it? And I didn't. I stayed in, which I think is what resulted in the burnout that made me go, I'll never go into corporate world again. I'm touched by that now. I'm touched by life. I'm touched by life continually asking us to step up. continually asking us to be real and asking us who we want to be. Do we want to be big? Do we want to be alive? Do we want to bring all of us? Or do we want to come in and numb for a certain number of hours a day? And then exhale as we leave, going, thank God, the day is over. I'm kind of trembling as I speak. It's okay, hold on, I'm looking over here.
So we have a couple of questions. I don't know if you'd like to look at them now or later.
I'd love to.
So Joyce has let me go back and see. Her question is, how do you feel your feelings, stay aware of what is happening in the room without taking it all in?
What do they mean by taking it all in? You mean like
Joyce, if you'd like to, you have the option to unmute yourself and ask with your voice.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is, sometimes I feel very open. It's like I can feel everything that's happening. And there's, to some extent, that I can just respond to it. And there's other times where it feels overwhelming. So I think in sometimes, right now I'm a teacher, so there's a billion of things happening in the room at the same time. If I attend to all of it, I can't navigate, like that's too much. And I also think the same thing when I've been leading meetings and I know that the guy to the left, he's got some tension. I like to hear about that. I know somebody at the other end of the table have something. In a one-on-one room, it's easy, kind of.
Yeah.
But there's some extent that it's nice to notice what's happening without feeling affected by it, to some extent. That makes sense, or overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, you sound like an empath.
I trained myself to become one.
And now here you are. Actually, I have no idea about bringing this up, but there's a Catholic term called, well, I won't even go to the Catholic term. There's something called active detachment. And it is a way of kind of stepping back and being able to hear it all. It's a frame that I can hold that just says, at the moment I'm going to detach from this, it's too much. I'm going to take it in cognitively. And I don't know if I can explain it at the moment, but there is a way of choosing it. A way of just going, you know, it doesn't, the difference is you just don't cut this off completely. Mm-hmm. In the moment you go, I'm just going to take this in cognitively, and later I'm going to, when at my own leisure, I'm going to unwrap this package and see how I feel about it. which is what helped me to do. I think it helps me now. There are times. Any other questions?
Comments? Yeah, and before we go to the next question, somebody wrote in the chat that she can relate. She says, yes, and I think many of us can relate to Joyce's question, and she recommends a book by Rose Rostrey called Empath Empowerment. So thank you for that.
Awesome.
So we have a couple of more questions. Mm-hmm. One question is, what kind of embodied practices can I use to be big?
Mm. It's a great question, especially for a person who put out a shingle that I was a coach that was about 2 inches by 2 inches for a long time. There's being big. There's a relational practice called circling that I dove into as a part of my coaching. And it taught me to speak up, to be able to be real in the moment and say what was happening for me in a group of people. It's hard to explain, other than it had a lot to do with owning your experience, like not blaming other people for what was happening, but being able to speak it, to actually feel your body and speak to what was happening, to be able to trust your experience, to go, what's happening here for me? It may not make sense, but I at least need to know what's happening here. And to be able to get someone else's world. And those practices together brought a lot of aliveness to me, helped me to wake up in a way that had me feel more whole. A lot of those things have been shut down, or I never learned them. It's a lot about emotional intelligence, right? But it's also about being human. And the more I could bring in those parts of myself that had been offline, the bigger I was, because I was more in acceptance of me. It's not an easy process, but it is about becoming comfortable in your own skin. I think being big in an authentic way is really about owning who we are and being okay with that and bringing it to the world.
Valerie, do you have an embodied practice that you could lead the participants in to move a little bit, stretch a little bit, become big, be big? A demo?
A demo of being big.
Or would it be helpful if I do that? Or would you rather
Gosh, do you have one?
Oh yes. All right.
Sure.
Okay, let's go for it. So,
all right.
Okay, so I would like to invite everybody either to stand or to sit, whichever is more comfortable to you. Let your belly muscles hang loose. So this is the opposite of tightening up. So now your job will be to occupy as much space with your body as you can. And it's going to be with your body and with your imagination. That's right. So open, stretch your arms to the side comfortably. You don't want to lock your elbows because you want to remain comfortable. And spread your legs a little bit so that you increase the basis of your body. And that's right. So this is the opposite of, especially we women, we've been told to shrink, suck in the belly because we're too fat. No, let it out. And now imagine that you're sending your breath. So you want to breathe and visualize your breath like the light from the flashlight up your spine all the way above your head to infinity. So now you're occupying more space with your imagination, not only with your physical body, all the way up to the heavens above your head. And then use your breath to also expand your personal space, sending it like the light beneath your feet to the center of the earth. And at the same time, as you use imagination and breath, feel the sensations created by sending out the breath above your head. So you might feel some tingling or some warmth or some like insects crawling on the head. On the top of the head, and also feel the sensations in your feet. So you want to pair the sensations, the feeling, together with imagination and with your breath. And at the same time, send your attention to the left and to the right all the way to infinity, imagining that you're sending your breath out of your arms to the left and to the right. So now you are so wide, so big, that the whole world is within your attention, your awareness. And if you think you're not big enough, send your breath and your imagination in front of you and behind you, all the way to infinity. And something interesting happens as you do that. When you look at the people on the screen and you look at people in your home, you might notice that they are within your space. They're part of you, and you are big as the world. So do this next time when you meet with your boss or a client. And I'd like to invite you to write in the chat how this makes you feel, how what this exercise did for you. And back to Valerie.
Awesome, Tanya, thank you. It's amazing. Feels so good. I want to talk a little bit about a different subject. It does feel amazing. About people not being aware of their impact on other people, and also of being able to see other people. So in terms of impacting other people, I've got a little trick I use. So I had a client who was just about to destroy her organization. She was extraordinarily, she was like the high flyer. She was just incredibly great at leading her clinic. And she was miserable, and by her own admission, making everyone miserable, right? So when I first met with her, she goes, I've narrowed it down because I know I'm affecting people. So I just ask people the same question over and over. Why did this happen? Tell me the truth. Why did this happen? Tell me the truth. And I just wait for them to tell me the truth. Okay. There's this, you know, person that was doing the customer service and putting in the data that she's doing this with, I went. And I just decided to be this person, this customer service person. And I said, I'm just picturing myself seeing your name on my phone. And I think I'd just be frightened. And she went, yeah, yeah. I went, well, I can't imagine me ever telling you I screwed up. And it was like it had never occurred to her. And I think it hadn't occurred to her that what she was doing wasn't going to give her what she wanted, right? That she wasn't going to get the truth. Or was that really what she was after? Or did she just want them to feel hurt? But it was like an, oh, I'm not going to get what I want. Well, it turns out this person really wasn't doing a good job. But no one was able to hear her because of the way she was delivering that message to everyone. And when she changed, they got rid of the person and they realized that she was right about a lot of things, right? The delivery has everything to do with what happens. So actually trying on the other person that someone's in contact with can be amazing, especially for them. Another example I have is of where we don't. We don't step into somebody else's shoes. And I find that happens a lot in the work world. I imagine a lot of people in this conference do this all the time, the stepping into someone else's shoes. But the breakthroughs you can have if you're coaching in the corporate world are amazing from asking this. So I was coaching a person and they were just telling me about this meeting and a person who wasn't considered as good as the others, right, in terms of what they were doing. Commented on the way they were doing Zoom and the mistake they'd made. And she launches back at her. She felt shame somehow and launched back with a pretty significant dig. And the person just shut down. The stage shut down. They just didn't speak in meetings at all after that. So So my client's telling me about this. Like, she's just shut down. And I just said one thing and now she's shut down. So I just helped her to see what it was like to be the other person. I just became the other person and told her what it was like as I imagined it. She burst into tears. She had this massive breakthrough. And she became a different person. Literally. And the way I know this is because I was working with some other people and everybody changed. She changed and everybody changed. You don't, it can look hopeless, but if you get a key person and they change, it ripples. Her ability to have empathy, her ability to see other perspectives was infectious. And they all attributed it to me, which was great, but it was actually her. She opened her heart and she never closed it. And then it rippled into her personal life and it ripples everywhere. So if you're considering coaching in corporations, I'm telling you that it is so rewarding. It is so rewarding because in a way they're hungry for it. I mean, God, if I had known these things when I was there, I may not have left. Right? Because there's great people there. So those are the things that I wanted you to know. I'm going to look and see if there's anything else that it's important.
Valerie, I'm looking at the clock and I think it might be time to open the space for questions and answers. Sure. If you would like so. We have a few gatherings. So one question is, how do you help other people feel their feelings if they have been practicing for long, how not to?
Yeah. So the way I started, because it seemed like all of my feelings became one big brick. So I couldn't tell what my feelings were. They were just one big, I thought I could say I was happy or sad or angry and all of them seemed true or something. Like it's hard to tell once you've shut them down. They just become, I'm feeling a lot and I don't know what I'm feeling kind of a thing, or it can be numb. If you're numb, just start feeling the numb and going, what's the numb like? Once you get below the numb, there's a lot more and maybe it's a brick. So then just putting words to, I'm feeling a lot, but I don't know what I'm feeling. Well, that's saying something, right? You're more in touch. Yes, what's the numb like, right? It's just what you have available is what you're with. You don't try to go where you're not. You just stay with what is actually here. And the more you're present with what's here, the more becomes available of what's here. So that's true of emotions. It's true of your body. Jordan's going, bring what you got. Yes, I did another talk on bring what you got. And I really do believe that it is the way. Much as in Marcus Aurelius, the obstacle is the way. In this case, it is you take yourself at whatever place you're at and you're there. You're actually present in a way that you learn to leave. You've learned to not be there. And here you learn to be there. And our bodies wake up by our attention, by our care. Our emotions wake up because we gave a shit enough to pay attention to them. And the amount of riches available in the simplicity of being present with what's here is unspeakably beautiful.
So you basically start with some inquiry. You ask a question of the person, and you using inquiry, you actually invite the person to bring their attention to their own body. So when they say, "I'm numb," you're not saying a statement. You're asking, "Well, what is it like to be numb?
What's numb like?" That's right. What's it like
to be numb? What's it like? Yeah. Thank you. Is it okay to continue with the next question?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So can you address people pleasing and how it can get in the way to authenticity and leadership?
Yeah. People pleasing is avoiding. People pleasing is my need for you to like me over my truth and what I owe you. I owe you truth. So I am forfeiting something for me and for you. I'm cheating all of us in people pleasing, right? It's people pleasing is about me, not about you. It's a selfish move. It's a move that won't further your organization or your own leadership. And it certainly won't have anybody respect you. And what's called for is courage. The courage to say the thing that's harder to say. Again, clear is kind.
Right. And it's the people pleasing is self-oriented. So it's basically paying attention to the need very often of a younger self, which is a very old strategy that is often rooted in childhood, that is a survival strategy. And it's based on the fear, maybe the fear of rejection, maybe based on shame, I'm not good enough, an anticipation that is a conditioning. So it takes away the focus from the true core value and what the leadership is seeking to accomplish in the conversation. Is it something that you would agree with, or what are your thoughts on this?
I would agree with what you just said. I think it's pretty profound what you just said. There are, in coaching, there are times that we go all the way back to, survival strategies are here and they're back there at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So we will go into survival strategies. We try to keep it pretty much here. But I definitely agree with what you've just said. And it does get in the way of leadership. Anything that's we're not aware of, that we're unconscious of in ourselves, will get in the way of our leadership. Or it will produce a kind of leadership that we don't want.
For sure. Thank you. Now, Andrea asks, what happens when the person is not willing to make changes and keeps hurting others? What can others do to stay safe?
Yeah, I've had like five things going on at one time. Number one, somebody, I'm wondering if they're in a position of leadership or if they're an employee or what's going on. Because obviously if that's first of all, everybody setting personal boundaries is the first step, right? And that's not an easy thing for people to do a lot of times, right? But to realize what's not okay and set boundaries around it, right? Easier said than done, but it doesn't matter who you are. Somebody's being abusive and that you just go, I'm not going to talk to you with you talking to me this way. I'm not going to put up with this, right? And to share the impact of what it's like to be with them and just refuse. And then, of course, there are all the levels of management and taking care of it that way. But the first one is a personal boundary and just not accepting it.
Thank you, Valerie. And we have one more question and just about time for only one question. And that is, what if your embodied presence attracts bullying in the workplace by people harboring anger and et cetera?
Would you repeat that for me?
Sure. What if your embodied presence attracts bullying in the workplace by people harboring anger, etc.?
That kind of indicates that embodied presence would be more vulnerable. And vulnerable in a fragile way. And I think the opposite is true. I think embodied presence doesn't invite bullies. Presence, usually they want to back away from it because it exudes a sense of, I know myself and I'm available. And if you push up, I'm here.
I agree with you 100%. My teacher, mentor, and friend, Paul Linden, who teaches how to embody love and power, he says, when you embody love and power, nobody wants to attack you. He's a martial artist and teacher of martial arts. So when you're present, if your presence brings forth love and power, nobody will want to attack you. It just keeps bullies away. Valerie, thank you so much. I would like to invite people to listen to this talk for another 48 hours. You have it for free. Or if you'd like to digest and take the time and go over the exercises, then own the library. It's a fantastically well-organized library that is packed with the top knowledge and practices of embodiment. And you have a few more days for half price until the price goes up. And if you purchase the library, it makes it possible for everybody else to have access to it live at no cost. And it also helps us financially. You have the link in the chat, how to upgrade. And you have it, you're going to have it soon again. And I'd like to invite you also to join the Facebook group of the conference. And you have the link, you're going to have the link in the chat as well. And socialize with peers and with the presenters. It's a lovely community and it's worth keeping in touch. And also know that we have coffee break rooms where you can go anytime during the conference and have conversations and connect with people. So before we conclude, Valerie, do you have a last tip on how to stay embodied?
No, I don't have a last tip on how to stay embodied.
May I steal one from your own talk?
Sure.
So a little bit going a little bit earlier when I heard you say the answer to somebody who says I'm numb is, well, what does it feel like? So I would say that your tip might be to bring an inquiry into the body of the person that you're working with. What do you think about that? Embodied inquiry, asking a question that brings the person's attention to their own body, one way or another.
Yeah. Pretty much out of what's happening right now. I mean, I'm you know, it may be my body, it may be somewhere else. It's just what's happening right now, what's going on, right? Just that awareness. And because of the work I've done, that all of it's available, right? Whether it's the body or whether it's a thought or a belief or an emotion, right?
Absolutely. Awareness of the here and now, which can be from the skin in or from the skin out.
Yeah.
It can be inside the body, or it can be looking around you and noticing the colors and the shapes and the images, and listening to the sounds outside or inside, or the smells or the tastes, paying attention to what is right now.
All right. Thank you.